This podcast features three supposed adults who definitely use adult language. They're also supposedly writers who are definitely not procrastinating by making this podcast. Listener discretion is advised. Welcome to No Bad Ideas, the storytelling game show where we take the worst ideas from the internet and try to turn them into stories that are actually good.
I am your theatrical cut host, Gabriel Rubina.
And that makes me your director's cut host, Sarah Shackett.
Which makes me the special edition, Zach Valenti.
Welcome all to our weekly deep dive into the worst ideas that humanity has ever had. Come with us, get into the water. It is absolutely not fine at all. It is full of kind of human terrible idea-ness and just kind of like thought pestilence, but we are going to go in there and we're going to mine three terrible ideas and see if we can turn them into good stories.
I'm so excited.
I am excited for both of you because I'm going to start us off. And I have just crowdsourcing taken to its logical and potentially most sinister extreme.
All right, so you're going to tell us this.
So I'm going to tell you this story that you two have not heard before. And then you will have just 10 minutes to try and spin it into the start of a good movie, a good series, a good novel,
a good scratch and sniff book.
Absolutely. Picture books, very welcome on this podcast episode.
It smells so foul.
Right. And then you will have your retribution. Zach and I, and on and on and on we go. So this first idea, which if you would like to read along, dear listeners, a link to this article will be in the episode description, comes to us from The Verge's TLDR section. And the title is just great. So this is a call to action. So gentlemen, please help DARPA find a new underground research lair.
What?
Wait a minute. So like most... Wait a minute.
Yes. I'm waiting.
Like a lot of the best no bad idea headlines, this is good because it already presents a lot of questions, beginning with this presupposes that there was an older underground lair.
We will get into that.
What is happening?
So the Defense Advanced Research Projects Agency, otherwise known as DARPA, puts out lots of public requests for scientific research, including high-profile competitions involving robotics and space launch technology. But today, the agency tweeted, this is the preferred medium of these calls, I would assume, Twitter. Just a very simple plea. Just very simple. It needs a massive, maze-like underground facility for running experiments, and it needs it right now.
Wow.
Wait a minute.
Oh my God, GoFundMe.
What kind of facility, I hear you ask?
You do. I do ask what kind of facility.
Well, quote, the ideal space would be a human-made underground environment spanning several city blocks, with complex layout and multiple stories, including atriums, tunnels, and stairwells, explains DARPA. Basically, it's looking for an indoor shopping mall, a subway system, or a 90s first-person shooter map, preferably run by a university or business that specializes in urban subterranean lairs.
You know, it's a shame, because I have one of those, but it's naturally occurring. It isn't man-made. Otherwise, it would be perfect.
Sorry, DARPA.
Yeah.
Yes. If you need even more detail, the tweets are helpfully paired with pictures.
I want more detail.
Locations like New York's Grand Central Terminal. An empty German light rail station and some kind of sinister corridor. The picture, it looks like where the, you know, Stasi took people to disappear.
Oh my God.
Some kind of sinister corridor whose stock photo tags include, quote, gloomy, garbage, and a mess. The place seemingly doesn't need to be empty, but, quote, spaces that are currently closed off from pedestrians or can be temporarily used for testing are of interest. The official federal business opportunity listing for this isn't quite as enigmatic or supervillain-esque as those tweets. It explains that DARPA is studying ways to quickly map and search large underground areas. I don't know why you think that was less supervillain-esque, but here we go. A project likely related to the Sub-T Challenge, which is aimed at helping soldiers and first responders navigate these spaces more quickly. Parenthesis, DARPA is a military research agency, but while it often focuses on combat technologies, that's not the sum of its work. It famously helped create the internet with the ARPANET, for instance. The agency ran one sub-T experiment in April at the Edgar Experimental Mine in Colorado. I don't know what that is, and I kind of don't want to. And then another at two mines in Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania this month. But it's noted that urban locations present their own challenges. The Sub-T challenges list cave systems as its third type of underground environment. So cave dwellers, DARPA may call upon you soon as well. So DARPA wants to get all up in your business, city dwellers.
All up in our underground maze business.
Yes. So like if you have a secret subterranean lair, the government wants to hear from you. And I mean, there's just so much in here. So I'm going to put 10 minutes on the clock and let you guys go wherever you will.
So there's only one explanation here, right? They're making minotaurs. Like, it's the only thing that accounts for everything here. Like, DARPA is officially genetically making man-eating minotaurs, and they need mazes.
Wired is making Icarus wings.
Yeah, Wired
is making minotaurs.
That's funny.
Yeah, Project Daedalus is off to a swimming start. Yeah.
I mean, if not minotaurs, at least a horde of orcs.
Something, right?
Like,
yeah.
Yeah, no, this sounds like Saruman building the pits underneath.
Yeah. Right, Isengard, yeah.
Yeah.
It's funny, there's that sort of point when it kind of goes, this is not as super villainy as it sounds.
Yes.
And I'm kind of hearing the article and going inside my head, yes, but less super villainy than this sounds still puts you like side by side with Dr. No.
Yeah.
This sounds so super villainy.
Yeah.
But weirdly kind of discount bargain basement, just kind of like, if anyone happens to have a, you know,
giant multi-block
secret underground
it's definitely
lair
for testing reconnaissance tech and not for something more murdery.
And why does it need to be tested in a city? Why we should really get on with doing a story instead of just complaining about DARPA?
You have 8:40. You have plenty of time to complain about DARPA.
Yeah.
So you want to go sort of a magical sort of direction where the government is basically building a...
Well, if you have like a doomsday device, you gotta protect it.
I'm curious about what a modern day retelling of the story of Theseus and the Minotaur would look like.
Hmm.
And I think that there is probably a lot of like really hot, really political things that you could do.
Yes. I'm thinking of, like, of a couple. Yep.
People that need to be brought from other lands. So yes. I actually don't know that is kind of like the way to go with this. But
Minotaurs show up in other stories besides.
It's true. Yes.
The myth of Theseus. If we still want to have that sort of fantastic element to sort of spice this up.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and the most generous reading of like the actual thing that's happening is, you know, if you have earthquakes or collapses and you need to sort of navigate spaces that you can't see through quickly, like having technology that helps you do that would be quite useful.
Yeah.
Right. I could see a straighter cut on this being like a James Bond style movie where it's like the U.S. government says it's looking to like be able to help in crises of city collapses with their new radar tech, when in actuality they're testing out their ability to create like citywide meltdowns.
Sure.
Or alternatively, it could be like Ocean's 15, and they just kind of need to get this like geographical reader mapper underneath New York City to get a reading of this building that they need to, that they're trying to break into.
Right.
But so then the cover is
we're totally DARPA.
Yeah, we're totally DARPA, and we're setting up a like research facility.
And DARPA is so secretive that actual DARPA is like, oh, I guess we have a project doing that. That makes sense.
Right,
that's
because
funny.
The different wings of DARPA don't communicate
don't
with one
other.
Another.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Wow, that's a long con.
Yes, it is.
Yeah, there's... I'm glad that you brought up Oceans because my mind was stuck in Fast and Furious land. Just like they have a certain amount of time and they have to drive these cars through like winding underground mazes that have like been set up with DARPA to get to the stuff.
Right. And I think that like whatever it is funnier if you kind of get to that point of, well, we were going to fake DARPA. And then we kind of crunch the numbers. And it is actually cheaper slash easier to just set up an underground military research facility instead of kind of faking it. At a certain point, you know, we're going to have to sink $200 million into this $500 million score anyway.
Right.
But sort of like, you know, that is one possible route to go with it. Of kind of, it is all a long con to sort of help a group of thieves break into a high security vault underneath New York
or
Chicago,
London,
or wherever.
Wherever.
Sure, sure.
Yeah.
And if you wanted to do something more fantastical, you know, that could be like trying to map the underground of like a realm like in Neverwhere, where it's sort of magical beings who live underground, and it's sort of this shifting web of clans and different, you know, goblins and fairies who live down there and that sort of thing.
You know what it is? It's it's Men in Black. It is
nice.
Whatever the organization is that monitors kind of
alien
extra human activity, whether it is alien or fairies.
Right.
You know, they're looking for kind of a place to put 1,000 refugees of something.
Right.
And so we need a testing facility.
Right.
For testing.
So, yes.
Not for long-term habitation.
Exactly. But really, it is sort of like them moving in 1,000. Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, and then having to disguise it successfully from the city dwellers above.
Exactly.
Because for whatever reason, like, the mine out in Colorado is sort of full.
Right, right.
Like or, you know, something about these non-human beings requires the kind of energy and heat that only gets trapped like underneath a city.
Or they might need to sort of be there at a specific time for some envoy that is reaching them, a ritual. For whatever reason, they need to be there a specific day, and they need to be there, say, a month in advance.
Gotcha.
And so then the agency, you know, agents, let's call them Agent Jack and Agent Carl are two protagonists who are definitely not played by Tommy Lee Jones and Will Smith, kind of need to engineer sort of like, okay, we need to get 1,000 giants underneath New York City for 30 days. Holy shit. And so then it's kind of about them coming up with, well, what is an excuse? What's a cover? There's going to be sort of, you know, all these weird noises and sort of probably like a little bit of tremors, because that's just kind of like what giants do.
Yeah, that's how they roll.
And then eventually one of them kind of has this idea of, let's pretend that we are testing weapons and DARPA things underneath New York City.
And then DARPA actually shows up and they have an interest in the giants, like exploitative interest. And then it's about protecting
exactly
the refugees.
That's right. That's right. Yes.
Wow, magical war underneath New York City.
Mm-hmm.
I'm here for this.
But it's kind of also like, you know, magic versus DARPA, like, you know, like magic
versus
technology.
Tech, yeah.
Right.
And I'm one step away from making the adaptation joke of like, it's technology versus horse. But sort of somewhere along those lines. And there's probably some kind of dilemma about, well, what is the Men in Black like organization here to do?
Right.
Like,
I was going to say,
are they actually
we should,
helping or, yeah.
we should talk about our protagonist, because I think that's going to be our way into the story.
And, 2 minutes.
I assume we're talking about the sort of Scully and, you know, we're either, I think, focused on the agents themselves or on some magical faction that's like our way. You know,
yeah.
I'm just trying to think of who is more likely to be the central point of the story.
You can have an agent B of that magical race.
That's what I was going to say. Yeah. Like, you can sort of have like, I think it's probably going to end up being a buddy cop movie. I think that it's probably going to be a human agent gets assigned the new partner that is a member of this magical beings. And the sort of important, I think, question is, how green are they? Are they sort of people that have been at this for a while? Is it both of kind of like their first case?
Right.
Are they kind of an old hat who just kind of like screwed up royally in London, and so they're getting transferred to the New York office, and it's kind of their last chance to make a go of it? Or is it sort of actual Men in Black style, kind of like the green kid that just got recruited?
And I think that, like, what makes sense to steer this away from being Bright.
Oh God, I'd forgotten about that.
I forgot the name of it. I'm so glad you remembered.
Have the sort of non-human be the vet, and the human be the green, who's just in and who is as excited as Tessa Thompson was to join Men in Black.
In Men in Black International.
Sure.
Yeah. Okay, I like that. I think that that makes a lot of sense. And the human is kind of the... So they're both kind of like the leads, but the human is really our protagonist and our kind of eyes
our way into
the
world. This.
Right, they're the newbie, and we can identify with
that.
Sort
of have to sort
that.
Out what's right and wrong, what their moral code really is.
And probably be disillusioned from their naivete.
Probably.
Along the way. Yeah.
That's a good place to stop it, because the timer just went off.
Ah, just like their naivete, this ran out, yes.
Oh, man. I'm so pleased. That was wonderful.
That's super fun.
I have no idea how we took the intuitive leaps to get there, but by God, those leaps were taken somehow.
Yeah.
All
right. Men in Black, underground.
And let's see where we leap next. And we'll be right back. Hey everybody, Gabriel here with a super quick message. Okay, so there you are, listening to No Bad Ideas, when suddenly the thought hits you. Could you be doing more to help the No Bad Ideas team keep making this podcast? The answer is probably yes, you could. You could sign up at our Patreon to help us keep making the show. How does this work? It's deadly simple. Every month, you give us however much money you think that a month of No Bad Ideas is worth. It could be as little as $1, but really it's whatever you think is right and however much you can afford. That money goes to help us find the time, find the energy to keep scouring the internet for all the worst ideas and keep trying to turn them into good stories for your amusement. And if you find that you can give us more than a dollar, you're even going to get some awesome rewards. For example, if you pay $5, you can tune in to a monthly live stream where we turn a couple of bad ideas into good stories. And since it's on video, you can actually see our horrified faces when we are confronted with the worst of humanity. And in fact, if you donate $10, you're even able to drop some ideas into a suggestion box so that you can confront us with the worst of humanity that you found and help us turn those things into good stories. If all of this sounds interesting, please visit our Patreon and sign up to help us keep making this show by visiting nobadideaspodcast.com/support. Once again, that's nobadideaspodcast.com/support. All right, and without further ado, let's get back to the show. Welcome back to No Bad Ideas. We have successfully survived, Sarah taking crowdsourcing to its natural and most extreme conclusion.
Underground, yes.
Now, I want to take New York to its natural and most extreme conclusion.
We're not going to Staten Island, are we?
You may wish that you were going to Staten Island when you see where this is going.
Okay.
All right.
And as people who have been subjected to living in New York, I am very excited about how this story is going to hit you.
Okay.
So, from the NPR Strange News section, and as always, dear readers and listeners, there's going to be a link to the article in the episode description in case you want to read along. The headline goes, two condos were illegally converted into 18 micro apartments in New York City.
I think I may have heard this.
Well, let's dive in. Two Manhattan landlords took an unusual and illegal route to double their rentable space, cutting their two condos in half horizontally so they could rent out 18 tiny apartments in their Lower East Side building, according to the New York City Department of Buildings.
Wait a minute. Horizontally, like,
whoosh. Yes.
Oh, gosh. I have not heard this. That sounds horrendous.
That sounds awful.
Quote, the ceiling heights were 4.5 feet to 6 feet tall on each level, depending on where you were standing. Department of Buildings spokesperson Abigail Kunitz sent an email to NPR.
In an apartment in Manhattan, there lived a hobbit.
Actually, though.
When an inspector visited the building this month, he found half-sized doors and low ceilings, forcing him to kneel in an improvised hallway.
My God.
A small staircase connected the two floors.
Where was this located?
Upper East Side.
And how much was
Upper East Side?
We're getting there. We're getting there. Don't worry.
All right. If they say a certain number.
Lower East Side,
if they say a certain number, I will say, that's actually kind of a good deal. This is New York City real estate, but go on.
Okay. So a small staircase connected the two floors, along with unapproved structural changes, the Department of Buildings says. The inspector found the space riddled with unpermitted electrical and plumbing work.
This just sounds too dangerous.
I don't like it.
Way too dangerous.
The compressed living space has prompted New York City Council member Ben Kallos to compare the arrangement to the movie Being John Malkovich, which features a cramped office and a tiny door.
Yikes.
Quote, it was funny in fiction, but a horror story in real life, Kallos said, according to the New York Post, as he described the living conditions the tenants endured at the top floors of this building. Bathroom space was also tight. While the lower floor unit, by which, again, we remind you, we mean the lower half of this condo that was cut horizontally.
What a nightmare.
While the lower floor unit had an illegal bathroom added to its legal bathroom, the upper unit only had one bathroom to share among the 9 micro apartments. The building is called the Beraka. I'm not sure if I'm pronouncing this right. According to the Abarim Online Dictionary of Biblical Hebrew, the name comes from Barak, meaning either to kneel or to bless. Housing officials became aware of the illegal subdivisions last week after receiving an anonymous 311 complaint about one of the condos. Together, the units occupy a corner of the building's top two floors. I am going to skip ahead because a lot of the rest of this article is a fascinating kind of series of details about just how terrible this micro apartment situation was, which you guys do not need to know. But to answer your question, Zach, I will say that, while rental rates weren't officially disclosed, one tenant told the Post that he had been paying $600 a month. And then I am going to skip right ahead.
I have to say, it doesn't surprise me that somebody went for that.
To the bottom of the article, the last paragraph says, in a sign of how expensive it is to live in New York City, a discussion about the practice of people cramming themselves into tiny apartments broke out in the comments section of the Gothamist story. In at least one commenter's opinion, quote, $600 a month is actually pretty reasonable. End quote.
Goddamn.
Yeah, we live in a very warped place.
So, basically, two apartments being turned into 19 micro apartments in New York City. Mm-hmm. And your timer begins right now.
I mean, someone who is a landlord discovers that they have a long-lost family that is 18 people strong.
Uh-huh. And so they need to kind of make space
just
for them?
I'm blanking on the name of those Steve Martin movies where he has like 12 kids.
Oh, Cheaper by the Dozen style. Right. Right.
Yeah. Desperate, need to bring them over.
Uh-huh.
I've got two condos in New York City. Okay, we'll make this work. And it's, you know, a family comedy.
I see. Just about like...
I'm trying to steer away from the actual horror.
I know.
that definitely lightens the mood. And I like that direction.
Yeah. Listeners, for anybody that has never had to live in New York City, this is like recurring nightmares that we have, because this is like particularly horrifying and hits very close to home.
Yes, and it does hit very close to home. And oh boy, Manhattan Rent.
That is a thing.
Yeah, you could get a house in Louisiana for that amount of money.
$600 a month. Yeah. That's so insane.
But I do hear you, Sarah, about kind of. We're in the situation where you need to find housing for a lot of people very quickly.
Right.
Yeah.
Or something bad will happen.
Yeah. And you could even do sort of like if you wanted to have sort of a touch of, you know, seriousness and consequence to it, you could sort of maybe set it in the 40s and it's someone trying to bring over all of their Jewish relatives from Germany or something like that.
Interesting. Right. Yeah.
And so like really they need to be over. Right now, I need the space for them immediately. Mm-hmm. So,
and then you have the shtetl all of a sudden is in on the Upper West Side.
We should probably set it not on the Lower East Side because that was very Jewish at the time.
Right, right.
And they don't have, say, all the proper documentation, and
there's a risk of discovery, a risk of deportation, or something like that. Or, you know, we can sort of steer away from the periodness of it or the seriousness of that situation and sort of how it reflects on stuff that's happening now. And just have it be like someone discovers they have this large family who need a place to stay. And so they say, come on over, and then even more people show up than the 6 that I was expecting.
And then suddenly you're living in Darren Aronofsky's mother as more and more people keep showing up and you're not, and they don't
Except
leave your house.
Let's not do that.
What was the princess story with the sleepy and the dopey and the
seven
Snow White?
Snow White. We could, like, that's the other direction my brain is going in, is like an alt Snow White, sort of modern, updated.
Huh.
Like, you know, she's got this like gorgeous one bedroom that she's been like dreaming of, and then all of a sudden, like, fairy godmother shows up, grants some wishes, and oh god, now this is like,
like, because it's Snow White, it's running away from like an abusive stepmother,
right? Right,
and into an apartment that, you know, she knows like Doc, because they're both in classic Columbia together, because this is modern.
Sure.
I don't know.
Or like he runs the coffee shop
or
down
whatever.
The block or something. Yeah.
And it turns out there are like 7 guys all living there. And suddenly, you know, she has to sort of make that roommate situation work.
There is a way of doing this where this is kind of a Island of Lost Toys kind of style apartment. Mm-hmm. Kind of like all these people that have nowhere to go. Don't have families, don't have kind of a place where they can be safe for themselves, all go to these, you know, micro apartment colonies that somebody has.
Sort of like Friends, but
more realistic.
But more realistic.
In terms of what people can afford.
Yeah. Exactly.
And so I'm trying to figure out what kind of conflict we can inject into this that isn't a building inspector comes to try and shut it down.
Right. And that can be kind of like the 5-minute comedy sequence of they find out that the building inspector is coming and they need to pretend that 5 people live here as opposed to 50.
Not a movie arc. Yeah.
No.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, you know, you would need to kind of deal with whatever it is that the protagonist is running away from.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
And
sort of figuring out, is the protagonist the person who's trying to make the building work, or is it someone who is coming?
I think it's someone that is coming.
Yeah.
I think that, that makes sense to me of kind of, it is someone that, and then you can kind of have it be an arc of, they are someone that kind of comes into this world and receives the strength and the growth that they need from kind of this
community.
Loving community, yeah. But mm-hmm. is then able to kind of articulate for them, but nobody should have to live like this. It is not okay that, right. you know, all
We're
of you
all
are sort of
in
crammed
this
in
right.
this way.
Right, and then
so
maybe
everybody
it's
gets
like
to grow by the end.
It's yes. it's our protagonist has an opportunity to leave the space, but they give it to someone who's been a mentor to them
Aha.
in the space, and then slowly but surely, they you know all stay in touch and sort of help each other find you know stuff that is more in line with their goals and dreams and that sort of thing.
Yes, I think that makes a lot of sense. But that does bring us back to, well, what are they running away from?
Yeah.
What is kind of the danger? I don't think that it can be...
Starbucks is on the Upper West Side.
I was going to go with, I don't think that it can be, you know, the Queen of New York read in the gossip mags that this girl is hotter than they are. And so she's like, bring me their head right now.
Yeah, the running away from an Instagram shame campaign. Right. So let's not do that, please.
That's, if anything, too real. Yeah.
But, you know, it could be someone who is whose family or sort of the expectations for them was to not live in a city.
Mm-hmm.
And for whatever reason, they decide to sort of run away from the life that is expected for them, that
right.
seems like neat and laid out. And they maybe sort of feel trapped and like there's no adventure for them to have. So they run away to New York.
So they kind of have a real like Christopher McCandless, like Into the Wild moment of kind of, I need to kind of like break with the life that has been prepared for me.
Yeah.
And kind of go and build some life on my own.
Yeah, and on my own terms.
Sure.
In that sort of Into the Wild spirit.
I like it. I do think that there needs to be some additional force, whether it is even just like their family hires a private detective
to
find where
like
they are.
Like a character that is sort of after them in some way.
Yeah.
I guess.
How are we doing on time, by the
yeah.
way?
You have 2 minutes and 16 seconds.
We're so good.
Like the thing about private investigator, I just feel like the release on it is never quite as oomphy as I, you know.
Yeah, no.
Because they're a hired gun, like, and like, it's, it, I just
Do
feel
we
like
want to make
a trope.
This also is a trope. Do we want to make this person like a teen? And so there's maybe like a, like a police factor of mm-hmm. you have to go home to your parents, kid.
Right.
Sure.
I think if we're going to go in that direction of like some authority figure is looking for them that doesn't want to kill them, that like, yeah, that we can sort of play up as like, a like, do they want to, you know, like what's the circumstances?
Right.
Yeah.
No, and I think that it would make sense that for a lot of the movie, we don't know exactly what they're running away from.
Yeah, absolutely.
That it is just sort of one of those things were bad back in the farm.
And then there's a shadowy figure that has their photo that we see
exactly.
every once in a while advancing closer and closer.
Yeah. But then, so then what is kind of like the journey, though, that they go with these... I guess 7 other people that live
yes.
in these micro apartments.
Yeah, and it could go a couple of different ways, right? It could be sort of a journey of like learning how to share space and how to focus not on yourself, but on other people, and sort of not be so blinded to the rest of the world that, you know, you see. You only see your own goals and dreams and so on. It could be like a journey of realizing, you know, the sort of Wizard of Ozzy thing of like, I wanted to come to this place and you know what? It's not for me.
Yeah.
And I've made valuable friends who have helped me realize that there's no place like home.
Mm-hmm.
Sure. I'm wondering if there's anything to pull from like the Unbreakable Kimmy Schmidt sort of vibe of like somebody who was underground in a different sort of you know, enclosed space is now in the big city.
Uh-huh, right.
And has that sort of coming of age sort of experience.
I think there would definitely be a lot of kind of those fish out of water things in here. I also think that unfortunately that was time. So
you shall have to decide for yourselves, dear listeners.
That's right. But very good, you guys. You did a remarkable job of pulling my story out of horror in New York City real estate into kind of a place that is much more wholesome than I expected.
When in doubt, Snow White, I guess.
All right, we're going to be in a little bit more doubt right after this.
Alrighty, welcome back everybody for the third and final installment of this episode of No Bad Ideas.
This is where we have good ideas and just like a chill time and
only good ideas.
Bad happens.
Exclusively.
Oh God, listeners, Zach just gave me a look that made my blood freeze. I am so worried.
I got frostbite from over here.
I am so worried about what is about to be unleashed upon us.
UPI.com brings us some odd news.
Indeed.
Uh-huh.
And I'm curious to see where you guys take this one. It's not the longest article, but it is a really silly idea. New Hampshire woman fighting to keep the letters PB, the number 4, we go, vanity plate. That's P before we go, vanity plate. August 28th.
Who would dare take something away? So special.
Well, a New Hampshire woman is fighting with state officials to keep the personalized license plate that has been on her vehicle for 15 years, P before we go. Wendy Auger of Gonick said she received a letter from the Department of Motor Vehicles this month telling her the vanity plate, a reference to her reminder to her kids to pee before we go, is in violation of state requirements.
Fuck those state requirements. Change that law.
Quote, I've been a mom for 27 years, and I've been saying this for 27 years, Auger told WBTS-TV.
Make this woman the senator. Like, no, like, this person deserves to be making the laws.
Who's governor of New Hampshire? Not someone that cool.
Auger said she was shocked when the state said the plate violated a ban on vanity plates referencing an, quote, excretory function.
Oh, come on.
Isn't New Hampshire the state that on their license plate it says live free or die?
I was just in, with my relatives from New Hampshire, and I can confirm that that is indeed on their license plates.
Also, for all we know, this is a license plate about peanut butter, isn't it?
Peanut butter and jelly
before you go.
Just peanut butter.
Peas, y'all. Yeah. Vegetables. Vegetables are important. Any mom will tell you this.
Quote, it's not offensive, Auger said. It's what you and everybody says to your children before you walk out the door. She was ordered to surrender the plate, but Auger said she immediately decided to appeal the decision.
Okay. Good.
Auger said she received a letter recently saying her case is being reviewed.
I hope that they, you know, don't dare to pry that license plate off her hands. That is too good.
And I can't wait to see what you two do with this nonsense in the next 10 minutes.
Oh, man.
You know,
so, like, aside from the Mr. Smith goes to Washington version of this, where we figure out, I mean, you know, facial recognition generation software is so good enough. We can actually make it Jimmy Smith.
Right. Yeah. He's making a comeback.
Yeah, totally. Jimmy Stewart, sorry. Actually going to the New Hampshire state legislature and writing this
right,
wrong.
Right.
But aside from that.
So did you guys, courtroom drama. Yeah, did you guys, when you were kids, watch Adventures of Pete and Pete, Nickelodeon?
Yes.
No, but I knew
of it.
Oh,
it's so good.
Yeah.
It's so good.
And kind of the operational premise of the show is it's kind of a suburban family living somewhere in the Northeast. And it's kind of this town that, like, the way that The Simpsons is kind of reality kind of stretched out. It's kind of a town where everything is reality stretched out.
Hmm.
But it's always kind of these very, very relatable kind of suburban problems that kids and families have. that are then kind of taken to sort of like very extreme, you know, ends.
Huh.
So it might be sort of a thing where, like, you know, the dad and someone else in the neighborhood are kind of both planning vacations to the Hoover Dam. And they kind of like start off with making a race about like, well, who can get to the Hoover Dam first? And then by halfway through the episode, they're,
like,
you know,
all sorts of things
they're manipulating each
and,
other's
yeah,
maps
yeah.
and kind of, you know, like
it's
putting
treachery
like
and Machiavellian moves and stuff like that.
Exactly.
Yeah. Or yes. It's like the kid and the wacky neighbor will just decide that they're not going to sleep anymore.
Aha. Oh. Exactly. And then it's sort of this like, you know,
surreal journey of how long these people and can actually stay awake and like what the world starts to look like to them super sleep deprived.
And the entire town is kind of following it the way that they would if someone was, say, on a hunger strike.
Exactly.
Because it is so sort of like important to this town's
you know,
sort
so
of
the
psyche.
Community psyche. Yeah. Yeah, exactly.
So in any case, I would love to set a story about that in sort of a similar environment of kind of, I don't know if it is you know, sort of like this mom and another mom at the same school are having kind of, you know, like a rivalry. And then the sort of antagonist mom kind of writes a letter to the government to kind of, you know,
that this license plate is inappropriate.
Exactly. Yeah. And then it is kind of about like this, you know, once that happens, oh, it's on. You about to get mommed. Here we go. And it is sort
right.
of this,
this
tale
sort
of
escalation of like being capital M mom. And being
right.
a better mom than the other mom.
And if it's something like that, I'm guessing that it is one of them is kind of a more solo, sort of, you know, hippie-esque, kind of like granola-y, sort of like sense of humor, but very, very caring and very, very good mom.
Right.
And the other one is kind of the textbook, you know, case of a
soccer mom. Yeah.
And they drive the, you know, sort of like exact minivan and they sort of have like, you know, the white picket fence.
And in that case, I would want the sort of antagonist to be the hippie crunchy mom.
Interesting. Okay.
And
okay.
Sort of the like soccer mom to be like, and sort of have her, you know, sort of central core be like, I'm doing everything by the book. And like trying to be as good and as correct a mom that I can be.
Sure.
And, you know, this rubs hippie mom the wrong way. Hippie mom retaliates. And then straight-laced suburban mom has to kind of find a wilder streak in order to like escalate and get back. And, you know, they both learn valuable lessons about parenting styles and so on.
Yeah. And they both need to kind of be a little bit more like the other person.
Exactly.
And I want their kids to be like best friends.
Oh, yeah.
Like, I want their kids
that's
to
sweet.
Be like
conflict.
That's
yeah.
Sweet.
Yeah. Like, you know, Romeo and Juliet style. They might not need to be a romantic relationship,
no.
but a lot of kind of sneaking out of each other's house to go hang
yeah,
out.
Yeah, no,
in
they've
middle
got
ground.
Like the
rolling
they've
their
got
eyes
a
at their
they've got a line
mothers.
Between the.
Oh, yeah.
The
with like those
right,
like
right,
can
right.
can
the
telephones.
The
line. Yeah.
Exactly.
I love that.
5.5 minutes.
So I feel that there needs to be kind of a time frame for this of
oh,
sort
sure.
of like, you know, the
leading up to like
the license plate thing happens at the beginning of summer. The last week of summer, there is a big
yeah.
festival
or if we
something.
Wanted to sort of make it very Pete and Pete, it could be like this happens at the start of the school year and like the Christmas pageant is the end.
Right. Yes. Mm. And we're kind of seeing 3 months of kind of
intense
motherly prank
warfare.
Yes.
Yeah.
I'm so excited for this. Intense mom warfare.
I demand that when we make this movie, it is called Intense Mom Warfare.
Because everyone knows what that means.
Oh, yeah, no. Yeah. No, for sure. Hell hath no fury.
Yeah.
Like.
And then you have, and setting it in the fall, you have more set pieces because you've got Halloween.
Right. You've got Thanksgiving.
Yeah, you do.
Oh, yeah.
Wow.
You have sort of the fall cleanup, like who can make their yard look nicer or sabotage the other person's yard by like burning leaves on it or whatever.
No, and you have kind of a lot of things that are like school tryouts for sports teams or for drama classes.
Yes.
And, you know, if you wanted to really go to this place, one of them could do something like, you know, change around the timetables of when the tryouts for the drama club are. And so then the other mom, you know, shows up 2 hours late with their kid and is one of those like, ooh, like, you know, someone brought their kids so late to this that they weren't even able to try out What about mom?
It's fine. It's fourth grade. Everyone gets a part.
Right, right, right. And I think that that is the key, yeah. That it is kind of this very ultimately trivial.
Yes.
But these two people treat it like it's life and fucking death.
Yeah. And I think if we had more than 5 minutes, we could probably figure out why.
Yeah.
If this is going to be centered, the question I have is, like, is this going to be centered on the kids' experience of this, or, like, are we genuinely following the moms?
I think it's a little bit of both. I think that you are, you know, in kind of like sitcom structure, you are seeing a lot of things from the A story of the moms, mm-hmm. but also periodically cutting to the kids' experience.
And hilariously, that provides the objectivity to yeah. see things as funny. That yeah,
right. Unless this is sort of something that's been going on for years, and this mm-hmm. is finally the year that the kids are like, we need to do something.
This is enough.
Yes.
Right.
And I do like that. That, I think, is interesting.
That would be interesting.
Yeah.
Because you could sort of flash back to how the conflict started.
And it could be something super
so
stupid.
Trivial.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Just like, you know, like that,
oh, man.
That dark, dark day. Cut to, you know, the two moms next to each other. One of them is like, hey, could I borrow that pen? No. Flashback over, yeah, like, you know, yeah. something like that stupid.
Right, in which case the kids will be a little bit older.
Yes, yeah. Yeah, I would say, like, if that's the case, they would probably be 14, 15 or something.
Something like that, yeah.
And maybe their younger siblings are starting to go to school.
Right.
And they're both like, no, you know, like...
We're not doing this again.
Right, yeah. You know, Bobby and Timmy are not going to have to live through the hellscape that we went through. This ends now.
Right.
2 minutes.
Yeah. How do we want to have sort of, we've been talking a lot about moms, but we want to have these be single parent homes, have dads feature at all, other moms that are equally bewildered?
I don't know. I think that there are. Oh, no. I think that, like,
they're definitely a group of bewildered moms, I think.
And I think that there's also, like, a lot of moms that are like, taking sides and,
oh,
like, you know,
sure.
Like,
yeah, they're fast.
I think that, yeah,
that's fun.
And there are people that are kind of like, you do not cross the picket fence. You know, if
right.
Mrs. Halverson invites you to her cocktail hour, you do not go, or you will find yourself out of that fall festival so fast that
right.
your apron will spin.
Yeah, no, only certain people's kids get to join the brownie troop.
Yeah. Yeah.
Right. Cheryl, I think I got removed from the text thread. Oh, you know how iMessage can be.
Yeah, yeah.
Right.
Delete.
Oh, man.
The true tools of power in the 21st century.
It's horrifying.
Yes, it is.
So I guess we know that this ends with some sort of peace between.
Yeah.
Peace among moms.
Peace amongst worlds,
yes,
if you will.
Indeed.
Yes.
Is there some sort of set piece where they both sort of realize that they're wrong, or sort of is there something that the kids can do to sort of force the end of this? Are they forced to work together for some reason?
Very, very, very good question, Sarah. And I'm not. Sure.
I'm not sure either, which
yeah.
is why I asked.
I'm sort of trying to think of something that would be good, but it is kind of hard to go. It's going to be sort of this, like, really heightened, really exaggerated, kind of relatable but blown up thing, and then go, for example, and then you're kind of like,
and that's time.
Okay, maybe next time. Maybe next time.
We got the start of something.
We did get the start
of
something. Yeah. No, and I would definitely watch Intense Mom Warfare, the movie.
I'm here for it.
Yeah. Sort of this, like, you know, Mean Girls, but even more heightened.
Right.
Right.
That's
Moms.
That popped into my head.
Yeah.
Mean Moms. That's the alt title.
That's
go.
Right.
There
I think
go.
So.
Well, I guess we'll all remember to pee before we go. And I don't know that.
We left that. We left that by the wayside. Yeah, we needed to kind of build
that,
more of that.
That
yeah.
is okay. I think Extreme Mom Warfare needed you to
it's,
leave
it's
that behind.
It's a piece of it, you know?
Yes, it is. It's the,
yeah.
the starting block.
An exciting incident.
Yes, it was the first very important pebble that started that avalanche.
This has been No Bad Ideas.
produced by Gabrielle Urbina, Sarah Shackett, and Zach Valenti. Many thanks to our patrons for their partnership in making this show happen. And a special shout out to our Idealist member, Rena Sarame. Today's episode features music by State Shirt and Jazar from freemusicarchive.org. You can support the show at patreon.com/nobadideas. And if you love the show, please leave a rating or review on Apple Podcasts or wherever you listen. Thanks. See you next week.